like to share a little thought this morning. I'd like to give an account of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Does that ring a bell to anybody? I want to read you a poem. A song was actually written. Edmund Fitzgerald was one of the largest freight liners on the Great Lakes. And this is about its last voyage. Said, the legend lives on from the Chippewa on down, that's an Indian tribe, of the big lake they called Yichigumi, that's Lake Superior. It's what the Indians called Lake Superior. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty, that good ship and crew was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from a mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and a good captain well seasoned. Concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. Other accounts I read said Detroit. This poem says Cleveland. Later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the north wind they'd been feeling? The wind in the wires made a tattletale sound, and a wave broke over the railing. And every man knew, as the captain did too, 'twas the witch of November come stealing. The dawn came late and the breakfast had to wait when the gales of November came slashing. When afternoon came, it was freezing rain in the face of a hurricane west wind. When supper time came, the old cook came on deck saying, fellas, it's too rough to feed you. At 7 p.m., a main hatchway caved in. He said, fellas, it's been good to know you. The captain wired in, he had water coming in, and the good ship and crew was in peril. And later that night, when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? The searchers all say they'd have made Whitefish Bay if they'd put 15 more miles behind her. They might have split up, or they might have capsized. They may have broke deep and took water. And all that remains is the faces and names of the wives and the sons and the daughters. This was the last voyage of the year. They were trying to get one more voyage in. It was the captain's last voyage of before retirement. He was that was his last voyage of retirement. And they really don't know exactly what happened altogether. There was one point that they changed course to try to get a better position where another ship recognized they were too close to what do you call the hard stuff underwater? Shoal or coral. Anyway, they were too close to an island, but they the ship ended up breaking in two, and they didn't know exactly though what had actually happened or how it took place. But it ended up sinking. The poem said after seven, it was 7:20 when there was another ship that had its radar. The Edmund Fitzgerald lost both of its radar systems, and it was depending upon this other ship to help it navigate that was about 10 miles behind it. And anyway, at 7:20, they lost them off their radar screen. And so that was probably the time that they sunk. 29 as Paul mentioned, 29 men lost their lives on that ship. I was thinking also of thinking about shipwrecks just a little bit, but I wanted to, on reading, they have a time log on the things and the conversations that transpired with the captain, but I noticed that 2:20 the ship said it left Lake, departed into Lake Superior. That was 2:20 p.m. It was November 9th. 2:39, the National Weather Service issues a gale warning for the area which the Fitzgerald was sailing. So they received a warning that there was some real turbulent weather coming in, and it seems like it had a reputation, Superior Lake, and in November, being very, very treacherous. And I also want to look in Acts, the 27th chapter. We have another shipwreck. Book of Acts, the 27th chapter. And I'd like to read, starting at verse 9. Now when much time was spent, when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them. Now in looking this up, the fast, Adam Clark was speculating the end of September, which was one of the Jewish fasts that he's referring to. And the Jews always had a saying. It said, this was the time of the autumn equinox when the Mediterranean Sea was sufficiently tempestuous to sail after this feast was proverbially dangerous among the ancient Jews. Here we have in verse 10, it said, and said unto them, Paul admonished them and said unto them, sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken of by Paul. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenix and there to winter, which is an haven of Crete, and lieth toward the south, west, and northwest. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, loosing thence, they sailed close by Crete. But not long after, there arose against it a tempestuous wind called the Euroclydon. We know the account of that, how they ended up. But one thing that stood out to me in this case also was an admonition that came from Paul. Said, sirs, I perceive that this voyage is going to be costly and damage, and our own lives will be at jeopardy. But where they were at didn't look very good. And they had a nice, gentle south wind, and they thought, you know, it seems like we ought to go. But there was this little warning that Paul gave that was unheeded, that they went ahead and went. And they lost the shipwreck. Of course, we know on that they were saved. Paul was praying and looking to the Lord, and the angel told them that he gave them, the men that was with him, their lives. The Lord spared their lives, but they lost all their goods, their tackling. They lost the ship. things broke up. I was thinking about how the Lord provides us warnings at times. And it comes in different ways. The Lord uses different things to speak to us and to talk to us and to help us to recognize that maybe we're getting off track. And I thought of the scripture that says, when you turn to the left hand or when you turn to the right, there will be a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. God uses different things, and they had that south wind. They thought, well, we'll go. It seems like this is, the shipmaster says go, and the captain, they say go, and here the wind's going the right direction. But yet there was this warning, just like with the Edmund Fitzgerald. After they took off, it looked like everything was going to be okay, but there was this warning that came just a few minutes after they left. And it seemed like it would have been well for them to really maybe even stopped and inquired, what kind of weather are we talking about here? What are we looking at? Knowing that it had a reputation of November being a rough time, but they went on and they lost their ship. They lost, and Edmund Fitzgerald, they lost all their lives, 29 men. I've mentioned before, but I know when I was 18, sailing out of the harbors of youth, the Lord gave me a warning in a dream, and He let me know that I wasn't ready to meet God, and I was going the wrong direction in my life. I didn't see the things out in front of me. I didn't see the storms of life. I was so ignorant, so naive. But the Lord gave a warning. I'm glad I stopped. I'm glad I listened. I thought I had things figured out a lot in an earthly way, you might say. But there were storms out there that I didn't know that was ahead. And my life was headed for disaster and destruction. Shipwreck. When I look around at my family, I'm talking about my grandmother's family. It's been shipwreck after shipwreck. Most of my cousins are in their second and third marriages. One in prison. The casualties have been great. But it's not because there wasn't a warning. The Lord is faithful to visit people. He's faithful to talk to people. I know God deals with every soul. I'm persuaded of that. But it's so easy to write over. It's so easy to disregard. It's so easy to have our sights set on something. And we fail to recognize and see the warning signs that God gives to us as people. I wanted to get a scripture, Numbers, the 22nd chapter. Numbers 22. This is about Balaam. It's such a sad account in the scriptures. Numbers, the 22nd chapter and the 22nd verse. We know Balak called for Balaam to curse the children of Israel. Verse 22 said, "And God's anger was kindled because he went. And the angel of the Lord stood in the way for an adversary against him. Now he was riding upon his ass, and his two servants were with him. And the ass saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, and his sword drawn in his hand. And the ass turned aside out of the way and went into the field. And Balaam smote the ass to turn her into the way." You see, Balaam had his sights on something. And he didn't realize that he was crossing over the warning signs. God was giving him little warnings, little places. Balaam didn't see it. Said the angel of the Lord stood in a path, verse 24, "But the angel of the Lord stood in a path of the vineyards, a wall being on this side and a wall on that side. When the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she thrust herself into the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall, and he smote her again. And the angel of the Lord went further and stood in a narrow place, where was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. And when the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she fell down under Balaam. And Balaam's anger was kindled, and he smote the ass with a staff. And the Lord opened the mouth of the ass, and she said unto Balaam, What have I done unto thee, that thou hast smitten me these three times? And Balaam said unto the ass, Because thou hast mocked me, I would there were a sword in my hand, for now would I kill thee. And the ass said unto Balaam, Am not I thine ass upon which thou hast ridden ever since I was thine unto this day? Was I ever wont to do so unto thee? And he said, Nay. Then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, and his sword drawn in his hand. And he bowed down his head and fell flat on his face. And the angel of the Lord said unto him, Wherefore hast thou smitten thine ass these three times? Behold, I went out to withstand thee, because thy way is perverse before me. And the ass saw me and turned from thee three times. Unless she had turned from me, surely now also I had slain thee and saved her alive. And Balaam said unto the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I knew not that thou stoodest in the way against me. You see, Balaam was overriding what God, the warnings God has given him. This scripture is kind of hard to understand when you read it, because it's like the Lord told him no, and then the Lord said yes, and then it said the angel of the Lord was kindled after at him when he told him to go. But the New Testament said that, let's see, it's 2 Peter 2 and 15. It says, which have forsaken the right way and are gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Bozar, who loved the wages of unrighteousness, but was rebuked for his iniquity, the dumb ass speaking with man's voice, forbade the madness of the prophet. Said he loved the wages of unrighteousness. Balaam was drawn by his... There was a propensity there in Balaam that he never conquered. It was a weakness in his life that he never overcame. And it lured him. Balaam, the history of Balaam, Balaam lost his life not too long after all of this had happened. But there was something there that Balaam didn't conquer. And it cost him. It cost him very dearly. And I want to get another scripture now also. 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter. 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter. The 24th verse, he says, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. Every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainty, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it unto subjection, lest that by any means when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. We've got to guard ourselves. We got to guard our thoughts, our lives, our bodies. We've got to be temperate. We've got to hold restraint. That's what he's saying. I keep under my body and bring it into subjection. If we just let it go, if we just let our lust take over, we'll shipwreck. We'll fail. We'll lose. When I think about shipwrecks, I think about loss of life, loss of valuables, loss of goods. A shipwreck is always damaging. In Paul's case, they lived, they were saved, but the ship was lost. Everything that they had was lost. And here he's saying, I keep under my body and bring it under subjection. Balaam allowed, there was something there in Balaam's life that drew him, that called after him, that pulled him. And I know all of us have weaknesses. We have weak areas of our life. And if we don't guard against those areas and fortify those areas, it can cause us shipwreck. It can cause us damage. You know, sometimes when you see people that live for the Lord. At one time, it seemed like they're so happy, they're so blessed, they're encouraged, they're in love with the Lord. And then they get in shipwrecked along the way. Loss, damage. There's reasons for that. There's things that happen that transpire. It's not because just the storm is too big. It's because sometimes there's something working underneath that hasn't been brought under control, under subjection. Desires, thoughts, feelings. It's going to take the grace of God. You know, if we see areas, weak spots that we have in our hearts and our life, we need to pray down grace. Lord, please help me. Help me to overcome in this area. Strengthen this area of my life. Balaam didn't see the signs. And it's, you know, I see this with these ships too. There were warnings. There were things there that could have saved them and spared them. But they didn't see because something was drawing. Same with Balaam. He didn't see because there was something inwardly, a weakness that he had allowed out of control. It was out of control. God help us today. I thought about this scripture, 2 Timothy 1:19. You know, sometimes when you think about the ships and how things looked like it was good sailing, things were going to work out, and things were going to... they didn't see what was up ahead. 2 Timothy 1:19. 18, let's read verse... 1 Timothy, I'm sorry. 1 Timothy 1:18 said, "This charge I commit unto thee, son Timothy, according to the prophecies which went before on thee, that thou by them mightest war a good warfare, holding faith and a good conscience, which some having put away concerning faith have made shipwreck, of whom is Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have delivered unto Satan, that they may learn not to blaspheme." They put away that clear conscience. They overrode the conscience that God had, that they had had at one time. They overrode that. And it said they've made shipwreck. In a spiritual sense, I don't think shipwreck means that we totally have to be lost altogether. But a shipwreck is so damaging. It damages confidence. It hurts trust. It hinders people in their faith when there's been a shipwreck. It doesn't mean I don't believe that they can't be saved. That one verse talks about suffering loss, but being able to be saved yet by His fire. A lot of people don't ever recover though, spiritually, in faith, in their walk with God. They get in a place, it's almost like... they don't know where to turn to. They don't know where to go. They made shipwreck of faith. Lord, help us today to be careful, watchful, attentive in our spiritual lives, of our thoughts, our feelings, our attitudes. If we don't, if we just let Him go, we can make shipwreck. We can cause great damage. And I've seen, I've lived long enough now to see people that have one time have a good experience with the Lord. Fall away. And then you see their children. And their children are so confused, so bewildered, so shattered. The thing that was one time stable in their lives is no longer stable there, no longer anchored there, and they don't know what to do. Shipwrecks are very costly. There's a lot of loss. When they sent the Coast Guard, they called the Coast Guard about 7:30. All they found was a little bit of rubble floating on the water. From a 700-foot long ship filled with iron ore, material that could build, material that could make something great, strong. It was all gone. That's what shipwreck does. Lord, help us to be careful, to be watchful, prayerful, sensitive in our spiritual lives. Bring our bodies under subjection, not just let things go. Because it's costly. It's costly for not just us. There's a lot of peripheral damage that occurs. Sometimes the devil will just tell us, oh, it's just you. No, it's not. There's a lot of people looking on. We live in a world that's so broken down, so marred, so ravaged. They don't see, there's very, very few examples of people of faith that are living lives of godliness and integrity to be a beacon. That was another thing about this, that Edmund Fitzgerald, was they were just 15 miles from Haven. 15 miles. So close. But there was no light on the shore. They radioed another ship. The storm had taken out the beacon. That ship didn't have any radar. The storm had taken out the beacon. There was no light that they were looking for. They were looking for a light. They were wanting to see something. And it wasn't there. Lord, help us to be faithful. I'm encouraged. I know we can make it. I know we can see the end. But we've got to be watchful, prayerful. We can't let things go. We can't disregard. Sometimes the storms are pretty dark that we will go through in life. Sometimes the waves that they went through, 35-foot waves that ship went through, sank under, 35-foot waves. The wind was 60 miles an hour, had gusts up to over 80 miles an hour. Storms can be pretty great sometimes. I remember Brother Sammons one time mentioning storm that he was in, said he, it was all, took everything he had to hold on. But the Lord will see us through if we'll be sensitive and careful and watchful and prayerful. I believe the Lord will see us through. Pray for me.